couple for one and one for all.
Yep.
Well, then this, I guess we'll figure out how it works with the new basement tapes. I'm Sky Daniels. It's 88.5 KCSN.
Marcus is our D'Artagnan.
My favorite guitar.
I'm Porthos.
D'Artagnan.
Yeah.
You're Porthos.
Sweet.
Those are seven strings.
Jim's Aramis.
Definitely.
Huh? You're Aramis. Rhiannon's Lady De Winter.
That makes all of us, Jim. This is the kind of interview it's going to be.
Taylor's Athos.
So I should introduce everyone who's seated around me today. The new basement tapes gathering together, Elvis Costello, Jim James, Rhiannon Giddens, Marcus Mumford, and Taylor Goldsmith. That was just in random order. I don't know what the proper...
Who's your favorite, though, Scott?
Well, if I'm honest, Taylor's right. already done
you
a...
You were not supposed to answer that.
He's done a benefit concert for me, so, you know, I got to give Taylor the props. Plus, he recorded an album right down the street, so. But we love you all. Talking about a concept like that, when T-Bone approached you individually, how did the conversation go? I mean, when he said, I have this idea, and he chose you, how did that
said,
all start?
What? I just do whatever he says.
So basically, yeah. He called up.
Or if I don't, if not whatever he says, whatever Jim says. Yeah.
And since they were both involved, Elvis agreed.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think it was, for me, it was really hard to wrap my head around, I guess, like the magnitude of it.
Yeah.
It's a crazy dream that you would never have. It's so out there that you wouldn't even think, like, oh man, I hope I get to do that someday. Because it's between these, you know, five awesome musicians getting to hang out together, and then T-Bone Burnett, and then lost Bob Dylan lyrics that had never had music written to it. It's just this wild combination of I don't know, it's just something beyond anything I ever thought I would do.
The word awesome sauce comes to mind.
I wasn't interested at all from a creative standpoint, but there was so much money on the table. I mean, I don't even need the money. I mean, let's be honest.
He's independent. He's independently wealthy.
Yeah. So I didn't even need the money, but there was so much I couldn't pass it up.
You know, it's the kids. The kids have got to eat, you know. So. Yeah. And all the kids all that 12. Aren't accounted for by you. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. All those.
Well, the one thing that I know how many have actually opened for Dylan? Three? Four?
You guys open for Dylan?
Once.
Oh, cool.
You've opened for Dylan.
Everything. So, Marcus, you're the only one who hasn't.
I'm the only one who.
He played with him.
He
right?
just performed with him on the Grammys, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just backed him up.
He played with me.
That counts.
That's true. He ended up like, you know, you all
said
him
it was
to sit
a,
in.
He said it was a dream come true. So.
We're going to hear that a lot today, aren't we? Dream come through. The fact is, as I was thinking about when you were given this opportunity and knowing that, you know, as T-Bone has said, I thought it was a great line he used, that you're musical archaeologists, that you know how to dig without breaking. You all shared a love of Dylan and a respect. How much of the reverential approach in the beginning made it a little difficult for you to get your heads around, and how quickly were you able to jump into the idea of, okay, we're given this...
That was a typo, though, wasn't it?
Responsibility, I guess.
Yeah. Wasn't it like, we know how to dig without break?
Oh, is
well,
that
break dancing
for this 3 days? Yes, yeah. you know how to dig without break.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had to put that aside because, like, I think whenever I don't know, I feel like if we were all to try to chase down the mythical aspects of the fact these are Bob Dylan words, I just feel like we wouldn't really be doing ourselves any favors, and the only way we could really get good work done is if we did what we do naturally and try to do our best versions of ourselves. I was saying how nobody wants to hear any of us do our best approximation of what a Bob Dylan song would sound
even
like.
Even the sound of the record, isn't it? You know, because we didn't go in the woods and get a tape recorder that didn't work properly. And, you know, I mean, they didn't go out of their way to make it sound like, you know, they weren't probably ever imagining those tapes were going to be heard. So, having the guitars perfectly in tune or having it recorded at any more, you know, professional level than it was, gave it a mystery. And it happened to be that they were writing all these songs. And Bob Cleely was writing a lot of lyrics, because when we came to the studio, we were shown the box file in which the leftover lyrics, after they had written all these songs and all the ones that are now available currently, there were lots more. There were even more than we were given 16 originally. Then when we turned up at the studio, there were another 8 for us to consider, and there were still more.
Yeah.
There were still more. Even yesterday, we were in the studio and we just looked down and found another verse to add to a song, because there were some other lyrics, you know. I mean, he was very, very productive, and not necessarily self-consciously making a hierarchy even among the songs he recorded any more than these ones. So, because we got the benefit of some really good lyrics, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, but as writers yourselves, when you see a trove of material like that, it has to, on one level, kind of, you know, if you didn't have enough respect for Bob going into it, it had to make you go, oh, my gosh.
It just sort of pissed me off, actually.
How long does it take you to write one?
Exactly. I'm like slaving away trying to come up with lyrical ideas, and these are sort of off cuts. And his off cuts are better than my prime cuts. So it was pretty awe-inspiring.
He's actually quit our show business.
Is that it?
Done. I'm out.
That was it? You realized?
Yeah.
What's the use?
Yeah, what's the use?
Well, I've had that feeling. It'll pass. Bills will come. It'll pass. When you got in the studio together, you're in the Capitol Towers, you know, the great Capitol Studios. That alone, I'm sure, invokes a certain sense of, you know, history. Then you had, I don't know how much you played with each other, if at all. I believe some of you hadn't even met each other prior to this. So how did the first, if you remember the movie, It Might Get Loud, there's a great scene where the three of them are sitting around and they really don't know how to break the ice, and Jimmy just starts jamming to the riff of Whole Lotta Love and the ice is broken and they're off and running. How did you guys break that creative ice and start performing together?
I don't think there was any ice, really.
Yeah, we just kind of dove right in and
started laughing, and you know, I think the humor of the Basement Tapes, at least for me, is one of the key components of this whole thing. And I think this thing would have been so different if it was like lost lyrics from like Blood on the Tracks or lost lyrics from Desire or something like a heavier Dylan record. I think the fact that it's lost from the Basement Tapes, I've always enjoyed the sense of humor of the Basement Tapes, and there's a lot of weight there too. But so, I mean, at least the way I saw it, I mean, there are obviously some like first day things to get through, figuring out where what you're
we started in a funny kind of way, because you normally start on a record. Most times you start Monday morning. Most times they book so many weeks, and if you book it a lot in advance, I don't know about you guys, you usually seem to start on the middle of on a working day. I feel I always have done, and on this occasion we started on a Thursday, and that sort of seemed to fit this project, because then the first weekend I had a gig. So I had to leave town, and Rhiannon had a gig, as you had a gig as well, so that she hadn't arrived. I had to leave almost as soon as we started. I got back to find that he'd cut a hit, Marcus had cut Kansas City, and Johnny Depp was sitting in my chair while then I came back, found Johnny Depp's on guitar. Thought I better not leave the room again, and then Rhiannon came, and then we had the band. Then we had a band then, you know. I mean, if I had just not come back from Vegas, Johnny Depp would be sitting in this chair.
And it was all getting a bit masculine, and Rhiannon showed up and rocked our worlds, and then it felt like we had a complete... We were sort of, scrabbling around, trying to get some things, and then Rhiannon arrived, and we did Spanish.
And it stopped being... And it's also stopped, let's make it loud? Because then we had other colours as well, because then Rhiannon's leaving from the banjo and we had violin and not to mention her voice, it's and all the different combinations of singing that we could possibly do then.
Well, and that probably unto itself, once you started realizing as you performed together, the amount of possibilities that existed in the ideas of the lyrics and then the musical possibilities that you all collectively brought to it. This was like 2 weeks, was it pretty much?
Mm-hmm. Was it?
So you pretty much had a, I guess you had to record on a real roll, and there wasn't too much overthinking, certainly, of how the songs were.
It was great.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, talking about not trying to approximate the original Basement Tapes, I think that, you know, we came to that sort of abandon through the other direction. So rather than just sort of being really familiar with each other and being friends and sort of, you know, just kind of rolling through the stuff we didn't think anybody was going to listen to, it was like coming from the other direction, which is, you know, we had to really focus on the music. We had the short amount of time. We had all this material we wanted to cover. We were, kind of finding our way musically with each other. Like, maybe we didn't know each other before. And it just kind of made the music paramount. And we didn't know if anybody was going to listen to it either, you know. And I think that that created an energy that, you know, speaking of approximating, I think we weren't trying to do that, but I think we did kind of come to that sort of abandon and that sort of the music is first and the egos are like left at the door, and it's just a really beautiful thing.
Now T-Bone talked about that, the fact that he had a sense, and I haven't asked him, you know, specifically, but he had a sense about knowing all of you that he felt that you would jibe together. Apparently he had a good sixth sense about it. Unless there were fist fights that haven't hit the press yet.
No, absolutely. I mean, maybe one of the things is that it kept you a degree humble, because we Marcus was playing drums on a lot of the songs that he wasn't singing on, along with Jay Bellrose. But, you know, the rest of us had to serve the others, songwriters, mm-hmm. on an instrument that we didn't always play as our first choice. So you had to really, you know, it gave it a character that we, you know, I can only play the bass line that my limited capabilities allow me to, or some other sound. Mm-hmm. And then we started to juxtapose sounds. You know, the sound, you know, if you put sort of Ryan's voice and banjo central to a song, we could have done, so really, I'm sure we could have picked up acoustic instruments and accompanied her on Duncan and Jimmy. But then what we actually did was accompany her with electric instruments, and then there's a different sort of explosion in the middle of the song, you know. We got, and that's become the sound of this group, sort of a psychedelic freak out in the middle of a hoedown, you know. It's like, that's great, because we haven't got some when you listen to the Basement Tapes, particularly the stuff that's just been issued, you hear the shared experience of Bob and the band, and the fact that they obviously, the band in particular, just had a lot of knowledge of lots of different types of songs, old country songs, old R&B songs. They were drawing off their shared experience of playing together. We've all come with all of our separate experiences, and you can't be completely self-conscious nowadays, because you know something of what people do, because you find out, because it's much more accessible. Information about people is much more accessible.
Well, that you know, invoked something when. There's an interview and a line that Bob talked about when they were making it. He said, there's mystery, magic, truth, and the Bible in great folk music. And obviously, that was something that was in his mind after the accident. And I'm sure, you know, we can assume that he went into this thing with a whole lot on his mind. We all know whenever you have a, quote, serious accident.
Those things are all in all music, aren't they? They're in folk music. They're in, you know, they're in... You know, one of my favorite Bob Dylan performances is Soon, when he sang Soon on the George Gershwin tribute. I mean, he's singing a song by George Gershwin, and it sounds, you know, it sounds like a spiritual song. So I think we all probably hope that we find those things.
While you were conscious enough not to want to be reverential, you know, you wanted to take a approach to it, which was uniquely your own. But you had to understand that the spirit, the intent at least, of the making of these songs was special. And at some point, that sense of camaraderie and, you know, you mentioned the band. It started to feel to you guys in a very short time that you were a band. Did that come immediately, or was it a couple of days in?
I mean, I think it came immediately, especially the fact that we all sing, and I think that it was very easy to recognize personalities. I feel like as you listen to the record and you start to do the math, either from a video or just from like whatever you can, like, you know, watching, you know, us on a late night performance or something, you can start to recognize the very, in my opinion, strong personalities on instruments. Like if Elvis is on bass, or if Marcus is on drums, or if it's a Jim James guitar solo, if it's, you know, like Rhiannon singing or playing like fiddle or something, like it's all, I feel like all of us have voices, not only when we sing, but also when we play. And so when you're switching that up and you're rotating the roles, you're constantly confronted with what that personality does on a different instrument. And I don't know, I just feel like when I think of why I like a band, it's because of those personalities coming through in those ways. It's because I feel like I'm having a dialogue with a guy because based on the way he plays guitar, and so for this, I feel like it's particularly exciting because not only do I get to hear the way a guy plays guitar, but I get to hear how he plays keyboards, how he plays bass, how he plays drums, and sing songs.
And the thought process that went into interpreting.
So in terms
lyrics.
Of what I love about bands, like this kind of thing is a dream to get to do.
I like to think of it in terms of like the Zen concept of beginner's mind. You know, I feel like getting thrown into a situation like this, it's like we're all kids again. You know, you're literally kids in a toy store, and you're like, I'm going to play bass. I'm going to play this weird keyboard. And you don't even know how, but it doesn't matter because it's fun. You know, it's like the whole thing. Because I think that's why, I mean, we all do. I think that's why you get into music in the first place, because you want to have fun. You know, like that's at the end of the day, at least for me, I just want to have fun. You know, I'll beat on the back of a frying pan or whatever. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I think we all have that spirit where it's like, what's the track need? I don't know. Let's make it fun. We'll figure out something. You know,
and the fearlessness that we admire about the Basement Tapes, when you take out the Dylan part of it, you know, which is a pretty big bit of it to take out. But if you just focus on the band, most people that think about the band, they, you know, you think about Levon Helm's drumming, and Levon Helm is not on the Basement Tapes most of the time. Yeah. It's Richard Manuel playing drums, if there's any drums on the track at all. Quite a lot of the tracks don't have drums, so they're the same as like the Sun records by Elvis Presley. They're a rhythm guitar and a bass and some singing, and yet they're still driving and swinging and all the things you want the music to be. But Richard Manuel was a really great, you know, non-drummer drummer. In the same way as, you know, we might be happy to play the bass in a kind of unconventional way. It doesn't, not comparing, and not saying we're, you know. But one of the things that gave us the freedom. That's the only way in which we're similar, is we're not actually conventional in the way we assemble the sound of the arrangements.
The alchemy of that record then allowed you, at least what you knew
historically. Yeah, it gives you that freedom to do that. And, you know, the Beatles did it as well. Lots of groups did it. Even Rolling Stones, lots of people there ended up with people, you know, Keith Richards playing bass on tracks. Or when you find out later, that record sounds a bit different than all their other records because Keith was playing bass. Or, you know, when the Beatles had to switch around for different reasons because Paul McCartney's playing piano, then somebody else is playing bass in a less fluid way, but in a way that gives that track character.
And I was just saying, the nice thing about that is that it becomes, you know, the music is the most important thing rather than, oh, I could play this lick here. It's like, you know, I'm going to play the, you know, like I was saying, you know, it's not something I play all the time. I have to find what I can find on it and where it's going to fit in. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of a unique, you know, a unique thing.
Go ahead.
Well, just the one thing that about like what Elvis was saying with the Basement Tapes, the first time I heard the Basement Tapes, that was one of the greatest joys to me. It was like, I expected it to be all Bob Dylan, but then I was like, oh my God, there's Levon singing on Yazoo Street Scandal, or there's, you know, Richard singing, or there's Rick singing, or, you know, it's like all these different voices popping out of nowhere, you know. And I think hopefully people will find the same thing interesting about the record we made.
And I love you to years, but just how long can I keep singing the same old song? And I love you to years, but just how long can I keep singing?
We'll wrap it up with this question. Now you get to perform them live in front of an audience. That's going to add a whole new I assume in talking to you today, a couple hours before you do perform these songs, there's going to be a free will, pardon that pun, a free will and attitude to the songs, but yet one where you guys are ready to take them on and you know, put a new life into them in the live setting. Well, yeah?
And that's just a part of what this band is. I mean, if we were to go up on stage and be like, well, we all need to get it exactly right. We all need to get whatever the songwriter of whatever song we're playing wants. We have to do that perfectly. Then it's all going to fail. It all fall apart. But I think we've all embraced the idea of like we're having the best time and working as hard as we can with the tools that we have, and the fact that we're playing one show of a bunch of songs we've never played live before, and we've never gone over transitions, and we've never
thinking.
Stop talking. Right, talk so
like, I mean, but it's going to be a blast. I mean,
mess is the fun.
Yeah, exactly. Because we've embraced that. We can't. It's not going to go wrong tonight. No matter how funny and weird it gets, it's going to be really a blast.
You know, the other night we played My Set and the Lost on the River on the Tonight Show, and Marcus said, "What about this sound?" And you know, there was like that. You were playing played mandolin on the record, guitar. But on when we did it, you played like a sound of like an organ on the guitar. And when I started to sing, I felt like I had all the space in the world because there was this sound behind. As well as a great rhythm from Griffin and Joe Bellrose, Griffin Taylor's brother, you know, the connection between the fiddle and the guitar, and so the song was actually changing shape while we were singing it. And then when we hit the chorus, you know, me and Rhiannon, we came in we harmonized a line earlier than on the record. Things are changing.
Why not experiment on the Tonight Show?
All of the songs now have changed. We've got extra verse here, a different ending, you know. And
that's what's so great about this project, and something that really T-Bone put in place from the very beginning was there was a sense of abandon and a sense of fun, and we all grew up playing in bands, and you know, the funnest bits for me are playing drums for Jim James, or you know, like playing guitar for Elvis. Like, it's, you know, there's a sense of fun, and I think maybe for all of us, because we all are the lead singers in our groups or in our projects, actually there's a real sense of freedom and fun at just being a basic musician backing up, trying to make the song that whoever is singing as good as it can possibly be, and sometimes that means not playing anything. And there's a freedom in that, you know, and an excitement in that, and that you know that you're in a team that is, you know, all going towards the same goal.
We decided to trust each other, you know. There was no point where anybody else said, here's what you do for this one, you know. And we all just said, like, all right, whatever you hear, that's what you're going to play. And by doing that, we immediately opened ourselves up to such, you know, such love and trust that it just, you know, couldn't be a bad time.
And the music wins.
Well, and that's a fitting way to wrap this up. I mean, just sitting with you today collectively and hearing how you shared thoughts on the making of the record in an interview, you know, bodes very well for how you are performing together as a group, and a group that really loves music. And that's coming out in every way, shape, and form. It's coming out of your pores.
Volume 2 is going to be the basement, no, new basement tapes, The Disillusionment.
The honeymoon is over.
New basement. Yeah.
And so now we have the working title, thanks to Mr. Costello, of the follow-up record. Listen, I want to thank you guys for spending time with us. Obviously, we love all of your music, and we appreciate and respect, you know, the approach you take on everything you do, and especially in this collective known as the New Basement Tapes. Nothing but Godspeed to you all.
Thanks
again.
It's
88.5 KCSN. I have to tell you what, I don't know, sometimes I pinch myself. Being able to sit in a room with that collection of musicians and people, their commitment, their love of music, it's just, it's unbelievable. I'm unbelievably grateful that I have an opportunity like that and to share it with you people. It's just to sit in that room today and listen to them and to see them express their joy for music and obviously their respect for Bob Dylan and the band. Well, what a fortunate thing. So our heartfelt thanks go out to Larry Jenkins and Jacqueline Saturn of Harvest Records, Dan Connolly and Bill Carroll from Capitol Records, the one and only T-Bone Burnett, and yes, the members of the New Basement Tapes.